if all you have is broad, vague vision, mission, then you don't have an actionable plan. So creating that balance between the two that's both visionary and ambitious, but executable and practical, that's where the fit is. And that's what we as a company do really well.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Anthony Taylor. Here's three facts that I think you should know about him. One, he is the CEO of SME Strategy, which was founded in 2011, coming up to 13 years. Two, his strategy blog has 25,000 readers a month. That's a lot of readers. And three, he is born and raised in Vancouver, BC, and he has a lifelong goal of receiving the Order of Canada, which I believe is the most prestigious non-military award within Canada. Anthony Taylor, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you, George. Happy to be here. Great to chat with everybody and looking forward to it.
Delighted to be talking with you today. In case people haven't guessed, part of the discussion at least is going to be around strategy. And in particular, what you do, what you help companies, small to medium large enterprises, develop their strategy, and you do that through facilitation. So let's take a look at that facilitation process, because I think a lot of business leaders get it wrong. They might think, well, you know, I'll just facilitate a meeting. I'll ask some questions, and then I'll tell people when they're right and when they're wrong. So tell us, what are some of the mistakes that you've seen business leaders, well-intentioned, but mistakes they make when they want to lead a strategy facilitation meeting?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, thank you again for having me. You know, when we look at strategic planning, we really focus on alignment, making sure that teams, people, culture are all on the same page. And this being the Your Intended Message podcast, you know, it's interesting because people assume that they are aligned, but when they're communicating, their message isn't exactly making it across as intended. And largely it's because there's misalignment. There's either different priorities, different ideas of what success looks like, too many priorities, different assumptions in terms of information. And so as a leader or a facilitator, going into a process where you're trying to come out with a clear vision, a clear mission, clear values, clear priorities, clear goals, clear actions, you know, alignment is that number one key to make sure that the next part of the process can be successful. So it really is a scaffolding. It's about testing assumptions with people. It's about moving from implied to explicit so that teams can ultimately make sure that they're working on the same thing. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, we call that escaping the multiple destination trap, where you're stuck, everybody's spinning around in circles, there's not a lot of progress, and everybody's moving in or working on different things, to what we call one destination. We use a one destination model, which is aligned vision, mission, values, priorities, goals, and actions, so that whether a for-profit or not-for-profit mission-based organization can get as much done as they'd like.
And sometimes when you get a group of peers together and they're in the meeting just to see what they can get for their own department, I don't care what anybody else gets, how do I win? Mm-hmm. And how do you get them out of that mindset? Because that's an easy mindset to fall into.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. So the biggest thing we say, like, what hat are you wearing, is the question we'll ask. Or because I'm a sports guy, and you'll see you asked about my crest earlier, it's the Basketball Hall of Fame. So using a sports metaphor, is that the name on the front of your jersey is more important than the name on the back. So are you thinking about your company or your organization, or are you thinking about your function? And one of the breakthroughs that we help teams get is when they can really think about the organization first and themselves second, then it breaks down some of those barriers. It breaks down some of that friction piece and recognize it's more collaborative than competitive. A lot of times people walk in with a competitive nature. And so being able to reframe that for everybody to say, hey, we're really on a team. We need to work together. And so we won't get where we want to go to if I'm right, you're right, we both lose, is we need to be able to work together to move towards a common goal. So reframing what a team means is critical.
And I appreciate you calling it a team, because some people like to call themselves a family. And I think that's yucky, because we work together, we're not family.
Yes, I joke that some people don't like their families. And so, you know, I interviewed somebody on my own podcast the other day who said he worked for Netflix and Zappos, but in reverse order. Zappos had a culture of family, and Netflix was entirely the opposite. They actually called themselves like a professional team. And so it's so interesting how cultures can be different and certain cultures foster that. And then if you like that, you'll gravitate to that culture and flourish. If you don't like that, you'll find it yucky, to your point, and you're better suited in a different organization. And that's why culture as part of strategy is so critical. And the listeners might have heard culture eats strategy for breakfast, which I believe is firmly true.
So I'm wondering, before we can even get into strategy, is it important to clarify what we believe the culture is and is not?
That's such a good question. Do we need to clarify it before we do strategy? So the way we look at it is that your culture supports the attainment of a vision. And so depending on where you want to go, the how will change. There's a point in Alice in Wonderland that I reference often where there's two forks in the road. And she asks the Cheshire Cat, which road should I take? And then he says, where are you trying to get to? And then she says, well, I don't know. And he says, well, then any road will get you there. So the way we do it is we really focus on first where we are, next, where do we want to go, and making sure that we're all on the same page in terms of where we want to go. And then we work backwards. Because if your ideal future is this warm and fuzzy and nice in working environment, then your culture, your behaviors that you want to foster are luckily some things around friendliness, warmth, compassion, empathy, et cetera. However, if the future, and I'll try to create like a opposite, that your successful future is it's super profitable, it's cutthroat, it's winning, it's a zero-sum game, then you might have values and behaviors like personal development, and giving it 110% and winning at all costs and determination. And those things can coexist in the right environment, but looked at separately, they are night and day. And so depending on your future, the culture will adapt to that.
Let's say you are called in to work with a medium-sized company to help them develop their strategic plan, their strategy for the next, and actually there's my first question. Do we develop a plan for 1 year, 5 year, 10 years? That's first part of the question. And tell me that right now.
Yeah, absolutely, George. So the way we look at it is typically 3 years. So a lot of organizations have done 5 year plans in the past. The way we see it is there's two problems with it. One is that there's so much change that by the time you get to 2 or 3 years in your plan, the environment has changed. So, you know, you're kind of stuck to it. The other challenge that we've seen is that most people don't have 5 years worth of strategic foresight. As in, they don't have the skill of being able to look that far into the future. It just gets too fuzzy. So why we look at 3 years, it's a nice balance between long-term aspirational 3 years and short-term implementation. If you think of, you know, a couple of years back during the pandemic, people could barely plan a week or two out ahead. So how could you look that far? There are certain instances, George, where you want to build a one-year plan. It's more operational than anything else. If you're a small business that has a lot of volatility, is the shorter timeline make sense. But for us, 3 years is a pretty good catch-all for most companies, you know, kind of south of even, you know, 300, 400 million, even a $1 billion company that we work with, they have a 3-year plan that's kind of stretched out to 4 years just to align with their existing planning.
So typically a startup, they don't have a 3-year plan. They've got a next month plan.
Yes. Well, you know, what's interesting is, so I am personally in the middle of a 20-year plan. So when I said, hey, here's, so I said, Order of Canada, that's part of my plan, creating this business, doing everything I wanted to do when I was, what was I? I was in high school. I said, what pays the most amount of money? I said, well, a bartender becomes paid the most. So I became a bartender. Then what gets paid most per hour? A consultant. And so I became a consultant and I wanted to travel the world and all of that stuff happened. So small businesses, yes. Even for our own company, we're at a 2-year plan. So, but personally, I'm at a 20-year plan. So it really depends on your lens and what's your intention? What's your intended message to yourself? And then how do you continue moving that along?
Now, a strategic plan, is it mainly about direction and values as opposed to steps and procedures?
I'll say it's more of an and, but I'll say one of the biggest challenges that I see with entrepreneurial, fast-moving, ambitious organizations is that they, and if you ever heard the expression, ready, fire, aim. And so they're so focused on the actions, they sometimes forget, are they the right actions? And are we clear on what the results that we're trying to get? The other challenge that we see, and this is largely with mission-based organizations or nonprofits, is that they have limited resources. They don't have enough time, they don't have enough money, they don't have enough people, they don't have enough focus. And so they can't afford to make mistakes. I don't think anybody can afford to make mistakes, but them more so. And so the strategy piece of it is about making the right choices. And so when we put in the mission, vision, mission, values, priorities, those are all filters to help ensure or support the right decisions being made at scale. To kind of build on that is, you know, if you look at a small business that's, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 people, the locus of control is very short. As in, I make a decision, I'm responsible for it. As you get to 10 or 20 people, which is kind of the typical growth path, then there are more people that you need to guide and direct. There are people who are doing tasks that aren't necessarily responsible for deciding the tasks or the direction. And then you get an exponential order of magnitude as you get to 50, 100, 200, 500, 1,000 people. And so the strategic plan is put in place so that it supports the right decisions being made on any given day. So 30,000 foot vision, on the ground execution. Yes, there's a lot of tasks, but you could do a lot of stuff and make no progress. And so you need that vision to say, hey, are we doing the things that are moving us in the right direction? So it's a balance of both. But if your strategic plan is an Excel sheet of 150 tasks, it's not strategic. If all you have is broad, vague vision, mission, then you don't have an actionable plan. So creating that balance between the two that's both visionary and ambitious, but executable and practical, that's where the fit is, and that's what we as a company do really well.
And there's 3 terms there that you've mentioned a few times, and I want to highlight them. So you mentioned vision, mission, and values. Is that where it starts, those 3?
It's all a matter of context, George. So I would say that it actually starts where you are. And so one of the, I'll call it pushback that we get sometimes, and not in a negative way, is that people want to get right into the doing. But one of the things that we encourage people to look at is, how did you get to where you are right now? Like, what are the successes that led you to that point? And so we start every strategy session with a celebrate, because people try to jump naturally because of human beings and the how way we think is like, what do we fix? What's next? And we never take time to kind of celebrate the successes and look backwards. We also take the time to do a SWOT analysis, which a lot of people are like, oh yeah, I know this from business school, I've done it. But the point of it is so that you and your team can get on the same page in terms of what your strengths, what your weaknesses, what your opportunities, what your threats are, so that we all have the same perspective. If we don't have the same perspective, we're going to have different interpretations about different information. And so your intended message is not going to make it across. and I hope you don't mind me kind of referencing it, it's just your intended message is such a critical part of all things communication. That is one of the biggest challenges with teams. So if you're not on the same page, if you're not talking the same talk, if you're not seeing the same things, you're going to have a different problem. So does it start with vision, mission, values? No, I'll say that's kind of where it ends, but it's part of the process. You're either getting to your vision or you don't. You're either doing your mission or you're not. You're either living your values or you're not. Everything else is just building a structure to help you get there.
And I think you said, so it starts with where you are. Where are we now? Where are we now in terms of our development, in terms of the market, in terms of the culture we have with our people? Where are we now in terms of what we think the future might look like? So it starts with, so I can see that map at the mall. You are here.
Yeah, well, exactly. So I'll explain the five steps we do it. And I'll tell you, I'm a pretty simple guy. And we designed this to be simple, that you don't need to be an MBA to understand it. In fact, most SMEs that we work with, some are incredibly intelligent, and many, in fact, all of them are incredibly intelligent, but not everybody's got a business school degree. Some people just worked up the ranks and became really successful in their organization. So we just made five steps, okay? And I could break them down, but basically these five steps are, where are we now? Which includes the SWOT part, which includes the celebrate part, which includes what's happening in the world around us. And all of those things are critical. Where are we going? Where are you now? Where are you going? And that includes the vision and mission. What's going to get in our way? If we know where we are and we know where we want to get to, what's that unknown middle that we want to focus on so that we can prioritize? So where are we now? Where are we going? What's going to get in our way? What do we need to do? Like, where do we need to focus? And so we look at three priority areas instead of seven or eight. And we say, hey, where do we need to focus? What do we need to do to basically bridge the gap between where we are and where we want to get to? And the last one is, how are we going to implement? And we spend a decent amount of time talking not just about the plan, but the structure of driving the plan forward. So that means, how are we going to communicate it? How are we going to roll it out? How do we make sure that everybody else gets our intended message in the company? How do we stay on top of it? How do we hold each other accountable? How do we track and monitor? What is all this stuff? The thing I tell every one of my clients is that there's typically 2 days of planning. We do 2-day offsites. So 2 days of planning, 3 days of planning, and 1,100 days of implementation. And most people over-resource the alignment or the strategy and under-resource the implementation. And so I say 2 days of planning, 1,100 days of implementation, resource them appropriately.
1,100 days of implementation. So that's your 3 years.
That's 3 years.
And of course, that 2 days of planning and the 1,100 days of implementing is doing and continuing to communicate along the way.
So what I challenge most of the people, because we usually deal with senior executives or board of directors, I say, how much of your time is spent communicating? And invariably, when they think, what do you mean communicate? I'm just communicate. Like, how much of your job, assuming you're not like in it, and I'm talking senior leaders here, how much time of your time? And they're like, all of it. And I'm like, okay, well, it's probably between 80% and 100% of your time is spent communicating. But I said, if you want the biggest, highest opportunity for improvement, become a better communicator. Focus on your communication, not just the message, but the whole system, the structure. Because you could say, hey, oh, I sent that person an email. I'm like, well, did you send them an email or did they get the message? Oh, I called them. Well, did you need to call them twice? Maybe you needed to knock by their house. Maybe you need to send them a text message. So it's just like, not just the what, but the why of communication. So communicating top down, getting communication bottom up, and across is critical for teams to move their plan forward. And that's like the highway of information. And last thing I'll say about that, George, before I move on is HBR did a study, and this is now in 2026, is the last time I referenced it. And they said, what are the traits that correlate with strong strategy execution? They surveyed 26,000 people at 31 companies, and there was a bunch of them, but the top two categories was information flows and decision rights. Do the people get the information they need about the competitive environment or the internal environment when they need it? And do people know what their roles and responsibilities are within the plan? And all of that is communication. And I'll tell you that of the top five, four of them fell within those two categories, and the list goes on. People get so focused on their competitors and everything outside. It's like, no, it's in your four walls that you need to make sure that your systems and structures are in place to help your team be successful. Okay, I told you I was going to say one last thing, but this is now really the last thing, is that managers' jobs are to provide support and direction for all of their employees. So when they go through this planning process and they create with something that's like they think looks good, it's all shiny, it's inspirational. But I said, well, if your team were to read this, would they understand what it meant? Would they be able to be like explicit and clear about what success looks like? And they get so lost in reading this document that they put their heart into and their time into, and they put their marketing speak on it. And they say, well, is the intended message making it to them? Well, they know what they need to do to move the plan forward. If not, you know, don't make it so complex. Keep it simple. And that is what a strategic plan is for. It's to guide people to make sure that they know the right decisions. And so that as leaders, you can be more effective in terms of how you communicate where you want to go and what you need to focus.
The strategic plan in writing, does it look like a set of 4-inch binders, or is it a 2-page document?
I mean, hell, if you can get it to a 2-page document, we even have it as a 1-page, but definitely not a binder unless there's a really damn good reason for it. But yes, we have it as a 1-pager: vision, mission, values, and strategic priorities. Now, of course, within the strategic priorities, you need to have measures, and that would accompany, you know, likely a second page. But basically, does your team know what good looks like? Do they know what the rules are? And do they know what the score is? If you don't have a score, you can't win. So you need goals. If you don't know the rules, then you'll get frustrated. So that's your values. And if you don't know what good looks like, you'll get frustrated. And that's vision. So if you keep it simple, that's all you really need.
Good, what good looks like, what the rules are, and what the score. That's a whole lot easier to understand than vision, mission, values, which get thrown around so much and posted on company walls that no one ever understands.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to make strategy just easy, not for you didn't have to spend money with a big four consultant. It's you just need a structure in place, and we wanted to make it approachable. What I think is cool about the work that I think you and I both do is just the impact that we can have with people. You know, it makes the difference of a CEO and their family and their community and all that stuff. You know, I view strategic planning as the way of changing the world. Because if I know a company has a good workplace, it means the employees are happy. If the employees are happy, their families are happy. If their families are happy, the community is happy. And if the community is good, then that makes the world better. And so strategic planning is my way of changing the world. And hopefully, you know, I say bring it back to the Order of Canada, which I never talk about, actually. So I guess I appreciate you asking that personal question, but no one ever really knows about that. Most of the time, I just tell people that I want to go to 30 Major League Baseball stadiums, and I'm at like 17 or something like that.
So there is the mission. Now we know what good looks like.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, you need to have it. Otherwise, if you don't know what good looks like, how will you ever get there?
You know, and I'm just thinking, I'm looking at that good, and I just wrote it down here, good, rules, and score. I'm thinking that that's someone that a team leader probably should look at every day.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I don't know how to make it more simple. It's just there's a couple speakers that I've heard, and they talk about the idea of like a 1-degree shift. And I'm not going to attribute it because I've heard it a couple different places. That like 1-degree shifted improvement over time can send you on a significantly improved trajectory. How I've heard it referenced in the past is, let's say you're on an ocean and you are misaligned 1 degree, that over time, I actually use a hand analogy. It's like your fingers look aligned here, and if you go straight, but if you're just like this, over time, the distance between your fingers gets further and further apart. And so why a strategic plan is not a binder or something that gets looked at once every 3 years or once a year is because the opportunity and likelihood that you and your team are going to get out of alignment increases significantly if you're not having the conversations for realignment. So that's why our clients both have us facilitate their strategic plan to start it, then we come back in monthly, quarterly, and yearly to keep them focused and accountable to the plan so that it actually gets done versus a binder that sits on a shelf.
And yes, I've seen too many strategic plans sitting in a binder on a shelf that even the manager who gestures over at that binder every once in a while doesn't know what's in there anymore. So how can the team know it?
Well, you know, it's one of those funny things. In addition to the binder, when you have CEOs whose job it is to be two or three steps ahead, which is fine, they forget that their teams can't read their minds. And so they'll communicate something and they'll be like, well, how did you get from where here to there? Like, walk me back. But they never do. In fact, they do the opposite. They keep pushing forward and they sometimes leave the people behind. The other thing I see is that teams will make a decision. A person will make a decision. Then that same person will forget that was the decision they made. And then they'll go back on it. And so it kind of brings teams swirling around. So documenting it, putting everything in a process or a system or a structure just helps everybody stay on the same page, stay in a line, allows the CEO to move forward and be visionary, but also supports the people whose job it is to implement the plan and actionable to kind of bridge that gap. So help teams just work together and communicate, make sure they know what's up.
The CEO's part of their role, of course, and responsibility is to be thinking two, three steps ahead, which means that the rest of the team is not necessarily thinking the same way. So how does the CEO check in with the team to see if what they're seeing two, three steps ahead makes sense?
I will say that I believe that part of every senior manager or leadership team member's role is to look forward. The issue that happens is that I'm looking forward at a thing and you're looking forward at a thing. If you're a marketing leader and I'm a finance leader and I'm a sales leader and I'm an operations leader, our forward looking is that we all have different vantages. And so the CEO's job is to let those people lead their respective vantage, but has to take into consider all of those perspectives to create one cohesive picture. And that's why we use the analogy of a puzzle, is that if you're building a puzzle, you need to know what the picture on the front of the box is. If you don't have that picture on the front of the box, then A, you're not going to know where the pieces go. And B, you're going to have a lot more of a frustrating experience where everybody is fighting for their pieces and saying, no, mine goes there, no, mine goes there. So that's stuck in that multiple destination trap because there's no one clear picture versus being aligned towards one destination. So the CEO's job is to hear everyone's perspectives, bring his or their, hit hers, them's perspective into the issue, and then basically say, okay, well, where do we all go? And it's not about agreement because you're never going to agree on everything. That's why having a facilitator like myself or the folks on my team helps, because we can pull out those various perspectives so that people can hear each other and make sure that their messages are landing, that we can actually get aligned. Because you'll never agree on everything, but as long as you can get aligned that as a team, we're all going to the same place, then it helps everything kind of downstream move forward.
When you come in as a facilitator, is part of your role to ask the questions that no one else is willing to ask?
100%. I consider myself a loving jerk because I really do care about the people that I work with, and sometimes too much. And I wouldn't say too much. I'm just an empathetic feeling person. But I also will ask questions to challenge, probe, poke, irritate, because a lot of teams are too nice, distinct from kind. They don't want to have conflict because in North American cultures, typically, conflict is viewed as bad. Whereas in other, call it Middle Eastern or European cultures, conflict is good. And so for us to be comfortable, well, sometimes we avoid tough conversations because it is uncomfortable, or it might be seen as not nice or, you know, full of conflict. Whereas me, my job is to create conflict, productive and effective conflict versus, you know, starting problems. So the benefit of being an outsider is that I have not only the opportunity, I'm requested to challenge assumptions, to test beliefs, to test knowns, and to help reframe or people think differently about certain issues. Because what's most important is not a senior executive or two being right. It's, well, we've got thousands of employees that depend on us. So what's more important, you or their perspective, or, you know, the thousands of employees that count on us for their financial well-being, or the tens of thousands of people that we serve in our community because we're a mental health organization? I'm sure you can put your ego aside because we have something way bigger than us. And that's what's really neat about the work that we do, is just the broad reaching and cross-sectoral impact, again, changing the world.
So part of your role is wielding, mastering conflict as a productive tool.
I would say that, yeah. Absolutely, George.
And you get to leave, so it's not like you have to say, well, gee, he's never going to buy me a coffee again.
I kind of joke. I said, I don't care what you do. By the way, I'm giving away all my good facilitation tricks here. Sometimes I'll just leave the room and say, I don't care what you guys do. It's your plan. It's not mine. But I'm here for it. I think one of the things that, you know, distinct from just causing problems and leaving, is the output is greater trust. Mm. If we can work through a strategic planning process, if we can work through team development, management, and leadership training, if we can work on the building blocks that create a strong environment in the team, and typically that's, you know, trust and psychological safety, then the team is equipped to have those more challenging questions down the road. So we want to teach them to fish versus just fish for them. That's why we're not consultants. We don't tell them what to do. And so that's a critical piece for us, is to be able to build that trust in a team, help them be successful ongoingly. And part of doing that is being able to walk into a room where sometimes people are feeling like, oh, them and I are so far on the other end of the spectrum. Like, we see things night and day. And often it's just, those are just assumptions or thoughts or beliefs. And when we go through the process of like, what does success look like? We say, oh, and I get this all the time. We do a survey through our conversations. They say, we're more aligned than we thought we were. So it's just, I don't know if crazy is the right word, just how powerful the human brain is to trick us into the negative. Whereas when a facilitator can come in and check for realignment, test the assumptions, challenge the beliefs, people leave the room being like, whoa, we're like way more on a team. It's just that I was viewing it from this perspective and it looked like a six, and you were viewing it from the other perspective, then it looked like a nine. Once we can actually see each other's perspective, we realize that we're both right and that both of us can coexist in being right at the same time. So it's a lot of strategy work, but it's also a lot of behavioral psychology and organizational behavior, which doesn't exactly show up on the name plaque, but that's what makes us different.
Mm. And for those who'd like to know more about Anthony and the services of his company, you can find his website. It is SME, as in small to medium enterprises, smestrategy.net. And you can also find that link in the description below. Anthony, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with a business leader who's planning to have a how are we doing type meeting, you know, let's review. We put together the strategy last year, and it's time for him or her to get together with their team. And if you could give them one, two, or three pieces of advice going into this meeting to make this meeting more effective, checking in, how are we doing? One, two, or three pieces of advice would you offer?
Absolutely, George. So before I do, I just want to say thank you for having me on the Your Intended Message podcast. It's been super fun. I love this conversation. And so for leaders that are about to get into a how we're doing meeting and a couple kind of best practices, I think one is focus on creating a safe space with your team. Okay. And when we say safe, you know, we can't say necessarily psychological safe. We try to talk about accountable, but really have the intention clear. You know, we're trying to focus on the process versus the people. So if you can kind of separate the individuals from the outcomes and just say, hey, the purpose is to look at the outcome, and then I'll give you the agenda, is what did we do well and what didn't we do well? And focus not on who did it or who didn't do it. Look, as a company, you'll have everybody more willing to discuss criticism and challenges and that kind of thing. So focus on process versus people. Number two is create the framework for like, why are we doing this? You know, we're doing this review so that we can move forward to that next level. And so if everybody is clear about what the next level is, then they'll recognize kind of what's at stake for doing the review. And the way that I say it, a different way or way to reframe it is, the work that we put in is a function of our goals. If we have small goals, we have to do less work for it. It's less challenging. So if we have big, ambitious goals, then we need to do big, ambitious work to get there. So it kind of helps you overcome those challenges. So one, process and people. Two, have something big at stake. And if there's a third one, just make it fun. Mm. Your team's got to be out. You know, sometimes it's stressful. They got to be out of work. It's psychologically heavy work. You know, just make it enjoyable. Say, hey, we love our jobs. We like the work we do. Hopefully you like your job. And saying, like, let's just enjoy today. It doesn't need to be doom and gloom. Take the opportunity to celebrate all of the good things that happened in the year. And then you'll say, wow, we actually accomplished more than we thought. Most people just focus on the negative versus looking at like, hey, the only reason we have as much negative, bad stuff, or as much stuff we didn't do is because we did so much. They built the next level that's more challenging. That's just levels. So if you can get your team doing that and focus on continually improving, focusing on the process and having something big at stake, you'll have a great meeting and your team will be even more aligned than before.
Encouraging advice. My guest today is Anthony Taylor, reminding you that the name on the front of the jersey is more important than the name on the back of your jersey.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.